Chapter 18. The group is growing. As Savmir leads Genna deeper underground, more of his rat-bred people pop from the shadows, moving easily in the dark. He dips his head to manage the tunnels, rough rectangular shapes burrowed out and skinned in a substance Genna is not familiar with. It is tacky to the touch, moist, and smells fragrant. He is careful to keep his head clear. The smaller sounds of battle do not penetrate the earth above, but the rumble of the metal snakes can be felt through the walls along with a roar of explosives, muffled. All at once, Savmir stops, whirling round.
Do you see? Do you see?
I see, he replies. How far does this go?
What poor light there is glints on Savmir's front teeth.
All the way.
You mean we could bring our troops up behind them?
Yes,
hisses Savmir.
Behind them, underneath them, anywhere we want.
Or we could collapse the tunnels right underneath them.
You do see, but must be now.
Genna cannot help but be impressed.
How did you manage all this without being discovered?
Are you listening? We must act now. Bragging will come later.
I agree,
says Genna, his hand sliding over the grip of his pistol.
Does anyone else know about this?
No. A secret. Wasn't sure who to trust. Wasn't sure Vesper would approve.
Genna runs his empty hand through his hair, a gesture to keep their attention on his face.
She wouldn't have.
There are at least three other rat-bred in the tunnel, and two of them are armed. One with a short spear, the other with a shrapnel gun. He decides to take them first, then Savmir, then the fourth one.
Hey! Did you hear?
He begins, pointing towards the rat-bred with the shrapnel gun just over her shoulder. As she turns, he raises his palm, releasing the dart housed within his wrist. It streaks out, silent, burying itself just under her jaw.
Something?
She looks at him, puzzled. Then her small eyes widen a fraction, barely noticeable, a sad last act of life. Without a word, she falls. In the moment that the others turn to her, Genna raises his pistol. Even as he shoots the rat-bred holding the spear, his other hand moves towards the charge in his pocket. Lenses training, forcing the mind to think three moves ahead.
After the armed threats are eliminated, kill Savmir, kill the witness, then collapse the tunnel.
Light shines from his pistol, poking a hole straight through the forehead of the rat-bred holding the spear. The weapon, held out to thrust, drops from senseless fingers.
Kill Savmir, kill the witness, collapse the tunnel.
He swings the pistol round, squeezing the trigger as the barrel lines up with Savmir's chest. Nothing happens. No light, no death. Savmir screeches in horror, rearing away. It takes Genna a moment to register that something is wrong. His ears are suddenly full of noise, a rumbling sea contained in his head. He looks down at his pistol to see what the problem is. But the pistol isn't there. Neither is Genna's hand. Blood spurts, energetic, from the stump of his right wrist, spattering on the floor, dappling the edges of Savmir's toes. Despite the shock, Genna realizes that the remaining rat-bred are not the problem. He turns to find three eyes watching him. Two are human, amber, the other set into the crosspiece of Delta's sword. Instantly, he revises his plan.
Collapse the tunnel,
he thinks. This was not the way he had intended things to go, but whatever happens to him, his mission will have been a success.
Collapse the tunnel.
He grips the charge in his remaining hand, brandishing it in front of the vagrant like a trophy. His grin is manic, and he takes satisfaction from the way the other man's eyes widen in realization. The roaring in his ears grows louder, the edges of his vision losing cohesion. Though he cannot hear himself, Genna shouts out a last salutation for the Empire's glory. The vagrant pulls back Delta's sword. Already primed and poised, it is a small matter for Genna to activate the explosive charge. The countdown is set to allow him time to leave, but it doesn't matter. Once activated, there is nothing anyone can do to stop the countdown. He wishes it had not ended this way, that Vesper had not forced his hand. But in the end, his life and hers are nothing compared to the greater good. 10 lights activate on the side of the charge. Immediately, the first goes out. Delta's sword swings towards him, but it does not matter. He has done what he had to.
For the Empire.
Delta's sword passes through Genna's elbow without resistance, parting hand, wrist, and forearm from the rest of his body. Before it can fall, the vagrant snatches the explosive out of the air, caging it with his fingers. 9 lights shine along its surface. He looks at them, then to Savmir, who is trying to press himself through the wall with little success. Genna simply collapses, his features locked in a grin. Savmir screams again. The vagrant frowns at him, then notices the rat-bred prince is pointing at the charge in his hand. Another light has gone out. Eyebrows raise, and then all 3 are running. Savmir and his remaining companion back towards the surface, the vagrant going the opposite way, deeper into the tunnel. There is no light here, save for the 7 green ones on the charge, and the vagrant stumbles often, catching his head on the ceiling, tripping, lips moving in silent, frequent curses. Another light goes out. The vagrant keeps going, making good progress until the tunnel splits into 2. Unable to see the choice in front of him, the vagrant takes neither, slamming into the dividing wall. Air rushes from lungs and sparkles dance before amber eyes. Though he manages to keep hold of Delta's sword, the charge slips from his fingers. A few seconds pass, precious, before the vagrant snaps back to attention, sucking in breath. He looks down. Delta's sword hums at him, urging him on, and soon the charge is spotted again. A 5-eyed spider, legless, staring up. He reaches for it as another light goes out. The distant rumbling of a group of metal snakes can be heard getting closer. Cocking his head to one side, the vagrant listens. He lets his ears guide him, moving closer to the sound. It is not above him, not yet, but it is coming his way. He presses the charge to the ceiling, and it adheres to the coating immediately. The vagrant doesn't pause to count how many lights are left, breaking into a sprint, Delta's sword pulling his arm straight, guiding, dragging him away. And behind him, faster than seems fair, the last light goes out. Samael marches out of the dome and into chaos. He does not have the kind of voice to carry over the cacophony, so does not bother giving orders or rallying troops. Instead, he takes stock, half-breed eyes untroubled by the poor pre-dawn light. Above him, a skyship battle rages, the first nomads pitting their skills against the Empire's pilots. It is too early to see which way the tide will go. Tough Call rallies the bulk of the defenders by the walls, leaving the main camp mostly undefended. Shock troops dropped in by the Empire are making the most of the situation, running through civilian areas, firing indiscriminately at anyone foolish enough to be on the move. Fires rage in several places, more being started all the time. Distantly, he is aware that Scout is curled in a corner, miserable, still recovering from the Seraph Knight's chorus. Though distracting, there is a comfort in knowing that the dogspawn is hidden and safe. Samael reaches for his sword and remembers that he no longer has one. A feeling of sadness, of failure, washes over him. Then he marches towards the nearest Empire soldier, who is in the middle of taking up a sniper position on the roof of one of the flimsy stalls. She sees him coming, shoots as he lumbers forward. The first shot misses him. The second takes him in the shoulder, the spinning bullet seeming to hum as it passes through. Vision mists as his essence spasms, then clears again. He feels no pain from the impact, only a slight hangover from the bullet's essence-disrupting properties. He ducks under the roof, punching up through thin fabric to get a hold of her ankle. With inhuman strength, he pulls the soldier through thin planks, down to his level. There is a struggle, brief, that ends with a neck snapping under his gauntleted grip. A few more are hunted down before he spots a group of Empire soldiers trying to come in behind Tough Call and the defenders at the wall. This time he does shout, collecting a burning piece of wreckage to wave over his head while running full tilt at the enemy. There are 10 Empire shock troopers, each armed with weapons designed to kill infernals, though they are equally effective on humans and half-breeds. Samael doubts he will be able to take them alone. Tough Call and her people seem understandably distracted, and it does not surprise him that the shock troopers notice him long before his allies do. Out in the open, there is little for him to do but put down his head and run. Shots fire, wild, missing, missing, missing again. As he gets closer, he sees a soldier flailing at his own face, trying to clear a visor thick with flies. The shock troopers all have night vision in their visors, but a new kind of darkness has descended, one made of bodies, tiny and black. And then Samael is on them. He does not fight as a knight should, with discipline and skill. He has failed in that role, and so gives it up, letting another side of his heritage take over. He grabs and gouges, twists limbs, breaks bones beneath his fists. The swarm hums, drowning out any cries for help. When the flies clear, all 10 are dead. Samael makes his way to what remains of the wall. Repeated bombardment has blown it full of holes, leaving plenty of room to see the Empire's advancing forces. Tough Call's people squat either side of the gaps. Those with ranged weapons trying to thin out the enemy while keeping their own heads. Those without keeping low, waiting for their time. The one-armed leader of Verdigris clocks his approach, shouting to be heard even at close quarters.
"You better be bringing good news, 'cause I'm only bringing the bad."
"How bad?"
asks Samael.
"Word is, the West Rift commanders got blown to hell in their beds along with half their best people. I got what's left here. The ground's been torn to shit in all the firing. It's slowing down their snakes, but it also means we can't deploy our brawlers. We're having to fight at range, and that's a problem because they've got more guns than us. Reckon they got more ammo, too. We're running low."
"That is bad."
"Tell me about it. We need some infernal backup from your friends at New Horizon."
"They're already helping."
"Oh, yeah? Well, I need to see it to believe it. Get them here."
Before he can answer, she adds,
"I don't suppose Vesper is coming?"
"Soon, I hope."
"It had better be, or there'll be none of us around to greet her."
A dull boom from the battlefield catches their attention. One of the metal snakes drops half from view, headlamps sinking into the mud, a pair of eyes squinting in confusion before vanishing completely. Another explosion, louder, comes from the metal snake. They cannot see the extent of the damage, but can guess. There is a belch of smoke, then flames surge up from the hole, waving and wild. The other snakes seem to pause in sympathy, bringing a temporary halt to the Empire's advance.
"Anything to do with you?"
asks Tough Call. Samael shakes his head. Using the brief respite, Tough Call moves up and down the line, directing aid to the injured, fighters to where the wall is breached, bolstering flagging courage. He is about to follow, not sure what else to do, when a squealing figure catches his eye. Though dishevelled, the glittering form of Savmir is easily distinguishable from the other rat-bred in Crucible.
"You!"
he shouts, pointing a tiny hand.
"You! Come! Now!"
Samael goes to Savmir's side, struggling to make sense of the other half-breed's babbling explanations. He does not question Genna's reported betrayal, the fact slotting cleanly into his mind with the ease of a truth already known. A sixth sense has drawn Tough Call back to his side. She waits until Savmir is finished before speaking.
"This is our chance. Samael, take your knights, Flathead, and the Thousand Nails, and any infernals you can get. Get to those tunnels. Use them to get in close, and make it quick. If they get to the wall, we won't hold for long."
An eye opens. Silver wings stretch before resuming their normal position. The sword begins to hum, and, unseen, essence flows from it to Vesper. She wakes, sudden, surprised, jerking upright, and slowly takes in the room. It is empty. Strange. She expected someone to be here. Jem, or her father, Samael, or Rila, even Scout. But they have gone. Relaxing her neck, she lets the weight take her head downward until chin touches chest, then rolls it up to her left shoulder, down again, then up to her right, down again, and up. Discomfort comes with the movement, but it is far away, like a man shouting at her on the other side of a wall. She is aware of something, but unable to give meaning to it. Sword in hand, Vesper gets up and goes to the door. A member of the Order of the Broken Blades waits on the other side. Vesper frowns, unable to recall her name. She is usually good with names.
"Where is everyone?"
The knight stares at her, open-mouthed.
"Did you hear me?"
"I... sorry, they're not here."
There is fear in the knight's voice.
"What's wrong?"
You don't know.
"We're under attack."
The sword hums in her hand. It hears truth, but there is a lie buried in there too. Their fear connected not to the fighting, but to Vesper herself. She smiles, and there is another slight discomfort, oh so far away. Instead of calming the knight, her smile makes them wilt further.
"You don't need to be afraid."
Hurriedly, she nods.
"What are your orders?"
"Come with me."
The two of them make their way to the base of the dome, and then out into the valley itself. Above them, the night is weakening, preparing to give way to dawn. Vesper knows it is the gold sun that will rise first today. Some would say it is a good omen, but she knows it doesn't matter whether the horizon glows red or gold in the next few hours. If there is to be any good, they will have to make it themselves. She doesn't need to wait for the sunrise to see. Fires blaze all over camp, fed by smashed tents, torn crates, and the wreckage of a skyship. Bodies and blood are everywhere, most belonging to the people that came for her protection, some belonging to the Empire. Survivors make hard choices. Many flee with whatever they can carry. Others try to reclaim the camp, fighting back the flames as best they can. Still others arm themselves, preparing a second line of defense. Vespa walks past them all, ignoring the shocked looks and worried mutters that trail in her wake. Up ahead she hears gunfire and shouting, the sound taking her back to Sonorous and another battle, many years ago. So far removed in time and space, and yet so similar. Vespa shakes her head. She has heard enough of war's dirge, is sick of its irregular yet predictable beats, its one note of misery. "Stay here," she says to the knight. "Help where you can."
"I will. What are you going to do?"
"End this, if I'm able. Can you pass on a message for me?" The knight lowers her head.
"Of course."
"Tell them I'm sorry." She turns to go, but the knight calls after her.
"Wait! Who do you want me to tell?"
Vespa gives a slight shrug.
"Jem? Samael? Everyone."
Then, to the amazement of the knight and the other defenders, Vespa steps through one of the many gaps in the wall, leaving its protection behind. The metal snakes are close now, bearing down on all sides. Soldiers march between them, using the vehicles as moving cover. It doesn't take long for them to notice Vespa, and then word quickly spreads through the troops. They don't shoot. Not at first, mesmerized by her lone, trudging advance. Then word gets to an officer who replies with a barking order to fire. Still, there is a reluctance, a sense that somehow to shoot would be wrong. A single shot rings out, and Vespa waves it away, casual, as one might a fly on a hot day. Quickly, the officer unifies his troops, calls for fire support from one of the snakes. He watches Vespa drawing closer, ever so slowly, as he gets the confirmation from the gunnery teams.
"On my mark!"
he commands, and his troop aim their rifles. Above and to his right, a metal head swings into position, picking out Vespa with powerful lamps. The officer gasps at the sight, wonders how the woman can stand, let alone walk. He realizes that his troops are waiting for him and takes breath to give the order when the ground opens up beneath his feet. There is a muffled gasp and he is gone from sight. The soldiers have time to turn, to train their guns on the hole that took him before new ones open, whisking them away, one by one. In seconds, the hole is so large that the metal snake begins to lean, then slide, half swallowed by the earth. Untouched and untroubled, Vespa keeps walking.
"Sir! Snake 5 reports weapon failure!
We're down another skyship, sir!
Snakes and troops on the far side are struggling to keep pace with the main attack!
Something wrong with our scouts in Wonderland, sir!"
The reports are coming in too fast for the night commander to keep up with. He cannot understand why such a simple attack has become so complicated. They have the element of surprise, their saboteur has done his job well, and they have superior discipline and military might. But somehow it has all gone wrong.
"They're asking for permission to withdraw and repair."
"Insertion team is down. I repeat, insertion team is down."
"What do you advise, sir? Our line is breaking."
"They've been checking in, but only giving minimal information."
He feels his lack of experience in the field keenly. His predecessor would have known what to do. A bitter voice tells him that obeisance would know if she were here. Even Vespa, with her strange ideas, has a strategy superior to his.
"Shall I give permission to Snake 5?
"Sir?" I've tried asking for a more detailed report, but I've been ignored. Captain Thrale is at the wall, sir. Repeat, she is at the wall. She's clear to attack, but unsupported as yet. Should she hold or proceed?
It all hinges on him, and he is failing to take action. He looks down at his splinted wrists. Functional hands are not required here, and yet he feels diminished. Perhaps the meds are wearing off. He demands another injection.
Sir?
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 He doesn't mean to shout, but his nerves come out that way.
Tell Thrale to attack! Tell all other captains to follow her example and press forward! Sir, I don't want to hear about Wonderland or anywhere that isn't Crucible until after the battle. Is that clear? Clear, sir. Snake 5 does not have permission to pull back. They'll have to repair as they go. Have it ram through the wall if it can't fire. Our troops will do the rest. No one is pulling back. We will not show weakness to the enemy. Yes, sir!
The Knight Commander turns to the window once more. Delta is still out there. She has not moved, but they have, slowly advancing behind their army. Yet her gaze still falls in their direction. Surely there can be no doubt now. She is watching him. It is comforting to know that one of the Seven has noticed him. She has saved him for something, and that makes his heart glad. A small diamond of certainty that he clings to. So far, the Empire's army has moved around Delta, their soldiers studiously ignoring her, a respectful denial. To look is to wonder about the schism in the Seven, to question it. Only the Knight Commander looks.
Sir, Snakes 3 and 6 have been immobilized. They're under heavy attack. What? How?
Another officer cuts in.
Snake 2 has gone dark.
Then another.
Sir, Captain Thrale has engaged the enemy. She's requesting immediate backup.
The Knight Commander starts to make a fist and pain lances through broken wrists. He sucks in a breath through his teeth.
I asked a question, damn you! What has immobilized our snakes?
They're collapsing the ground under them, sir. We've got hostiles engaging our troops on all sides.
The officer touches a hand to his ear.
What is it?
Snaps the Knight Commander.
Infernals,
comes the shocked reply.
We have infernals. They're in our lines.
Keep calm, Captain, and order our Seraph Knights to pull back and engage the Infernals. This is what we were made for.
They have a moment to take solace in the idea before the next report comes in.
Sir, I have reports that the Bearer is on the battlefield.
You're sure?
Yes, sir. She is alone and clear of the wall.
The Knight Commander frowns.
Where is she now, exactly?
Unknown, sir. The soldier reporting in is injured. He says his unit was sucked into the ground by giant green demons. He's the only one left.
She can't have vanished! Find her!
A suspicion drags him back to the window. He frowns, sure that he is right, but needing evidence.
Sir, what about Captain Thrale?
Do we only have one decent officer in this army? The other captain should be in position by now.
He shakes his head.
Send in a skyship on a glory run. Tell the pilot that their name will be added to the songs.
Yes, sir.
Then he sees her, a grey spectre emerging from the chaos. It is as he suspected.
Call the Seraph Knights back!
But, sir, they're already engaging the Infernals.
Call them back now! Tell them to move to Delta's location and summon my guard. I'm going out there. And get me those damn meds!
Yes, sir!
With no small amount of relief, the Night Commander leaves the command center. His officers know the mission, and they have their orders. Let them win their own glory now, he thinks, and let it be a shadow of my own.